Welcome to episode 175 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, Jen, and John. This week, we read Sinestro Core War, Part 1, by Jeff Johns and Dave Gibbons. And now, the cast begins.
Andy, I started raiding in WoW again.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
It's like goodbye free time.
You were like containing it to just like 2v2s in like arena, right? Mostly?
No, I don't PvP. No, I was just...
You've been on quite a bit then. What have you been filling your time with?
Gearing farming? For raiding.
Oh.
Basically, I logged on one day, and then the next day, everyone from my old guild was back. And they're like, we all just decided to start playing again.
Dangerous.
Yeah. So we're gearing up for heroics. So we've been running like flex and... they're carrying like the newer people through normals.
Yeah, I forget that you like serious hardcore raid. So when I ask what you've been doing all this time and you say gearing up, my thought is like, oh, you go buy like a couple purples and then you go into an LFR, but you don't.
No. I'm like working on the legendary cloak quest line right now. It's what's been consuming all my free time.
Yeah, I really want to do that now because once WoD hits, it's just not going to matter.
Yeah. I am sad because I never finished the quest line in Kata for the legendary staff, and I was like halfway through it.
Aww. It's not that hard. You can go back and do it now pretty easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck you, giant bug.
Just lazy.
Yeah, the only legendary I've ever gotten is the, what the hell is it? Thunder Fury.
Did I tell you my Thunder Fury story?
No, story time with Jen, go.
So, I spent about a year straight farming rag for the Eye of Sulfuron for the hammer. Because my chamois can equip it. In that span of time, I wound up with 3 Thunder Furies, none of which I can equip. I know that's like a really actually pretty lucky drop rate for the bindings, but goddamn.
It's still frustrating.
Yeah. I finally got the hammer though, like earlier this month, I think, or early in April.
What's a word? Oh, I got a word.
I was going to suggest fearful.
That's the exact same word I was just like, yeah, all right.
Okay.
Ooh, that or... no, I got a better one. All right, everybody, welcome to another cool episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hey.
And John.
Hoi hoi.
And this week, we're continuing our Green Lantern... Green Lanterns that are not Hal Jordan, ostensibly that's what we're going to call it. I don't know. It's a Green Lantern series, and this week we read Sinestro Core War Volume 1, written by Jeff Johns and Dave Gibbons, with art from Ivan Rice, Patrick Gleason, and Ethan Van Scriver. And I don't know what to think about this comic. I loved it. I loved it when I first read it. But reading it again, I'm less certain.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. Not that
Let me tell you.
Not that I hate it. I just... You guys go first.
Okay. So, I love this because it's the start of something...
Huge.
Huge. The seeds are being planted towards the big arc. Another big arc. And then another arc after that. And then whatever happens after that. I love it. I think it's great. I think it's a good build.
Yeah, yes. I agree. No, I feel like it got off to a little bit of a rough start, but maybe after the first 5 pages, I started getting really into it and couldn't put it down. And it was just, it makes you feel like something really epic is about to happen. And I actually haven't read Blackest Night or Brightest Day.
Oh.
So, this is the first time I've read this, too. So this is, like, my introduction, and I have a vague idea of what happens in the future. but like I can tell something big is going to happen. And I feel like it actually fleshed out the arc in a really good way where it didn't give away everything at first, but it also felt like there was enough information that I got a sense of like the epicness of the overall storyline.
Yeah, especially coming from the Guardians, you get a really good sense of how much more they know than everyone else.
Yeah.
And how much they don't tell fucking anybody anything.
Well, you know, how much more they know than everybody else, but in actuality, how dumb they all are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how fucking smart Ganthet is.
Yeah, right?
You figure they would listen to Ganthet. Like, the first time around, they all died except for Ganthet. Like, come on, don't do it all again.
Huh? What?
Like, don't do it all again. Like, don't just let all yourselves die and then Ganthet be right again.
Yeah.
They don't learn. They just don't learn.
Well, I like how they actually kick him out this time, too.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, one of them learns with him. Or
yeah, Sayid, right?
Yeah.
That's how I pronounce it in my head. I don't know if there's a Sayid or what.
I say Sayid.
Sayid sounds about Sayid. Right. I'm sure we will be corrected as there are 8 billion new names to learn.
Yeah. I just... So... Okay. My fundamental problem with this... I really, really like the story, right? But my fundamental problem with this is that this is about the point where Green Lantern for me started being a space epic and not like a space cop comic kind of thing. Like, they call themselves cops in this, and that's kind of like the big thing that they are. They're right. Space cops. Except they're not cops anymore. Now they're in a war. Complete war has broken out across the galaxy, and they're the only people who are in line to stop it. And like, that stuff is all cool, but it like, it's a complete change in tone from what Green Lantern has been in the past. And so it's not that I don't like this, it just does, it stops feeling like Green Lantern to me.
So it just doesn't work with like your overall sense of what the series ought to be?
Yeah, I kind of think of this the same way I think of like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. The J.J. Hey. Abrams Star Trek is a really fun to watch, great sci-fi franchise. I enjoy watching it, I have a good time, I go to the theaters, I go watch it in the theaters, I don't wait for it on Netflix, like, I enjoy watching it. But other than the name, it's not Star Trek. You know?
I get what you mean there.
So, like, this is great. I really enjoy reading this. My only, like, gripe that just keeps coming back to me as I read it is this just does not feel like Green Lantern anymore. And I think it kind of, like, it sets you up for epic thing after epic thing after epic thing. And it's kind of like, it just sets you up for all of this stuff that gets to be a little overwhelming if you're coming to Green Lantern looking for space cops.
So
overwhelming. I don't know.
I've read enough Green Lantern, I think, to get a good idea of the major events.
Right.
You know, Hal Jordan start, how Kyle Rayner got the ring, how he rebuilt the core, but what would you say is, like, the main differentiator between this and the rest of the title?
So, I've thought about this a lot, because I really do like Geoff Johns as a writer, and I like a lot of stuff he does for comics.
Yes.
But for me, I think it happened with the rebirth of Hal Jordan. A consistent theme in Geoff Johns' career is that he is, like, strapped, like, he loves nostalgia. He wants all of the heroes he had when he was a kid to be back. And over the courses of his career at DC, he's made it happen. Hal Jordan's come back. Barry Allen is now the primary, like, pre-52. Like, he brought Barry Allen back to life and made Barry Allen the Flash and took Wally West out of the picture. Like, and he writes these characters really well. It's just that in the process of bringing them back, he's also told epic stories. It's just there's a very, like, clear nostalgia thing. And I think he used that need to bring these characters back to also start other storylines. And I think this storyline really starts with the rebirth of Hal Jordan. Yeah. And the, like, retcon revelation that Parallax is its own separate entity. And that like different emotions will have their own entities, and how willpower has the ion entity, and that retconning speaking, when we read Power of Ion, the power that he took was the entity of Ion, and he became host for it.
Right.
And because he was the sole host, and that power wasn't shared among anyone, he basically was Ion. And that's why he was so fucking mega powerful, because he was like one of the, like, I think, I don't know, how many are there? Like 6, 7?
Oh, you're going to make me fail.
I don't know, but they're the true first beings of existence.
Yeah.
And through their existence, they define all of existence, which is why no matter how many aliens you have, they all have emotions. Right?
Okay.
That's the kind of contrivance. And it's like this big, epic thing, and I don't know. I really do enjoy it. I don't know. There's something I can't put my finger on that leaves me, like, not wanting to buy in completely with this comic. But
that's interesting.
I do understand your point, but I mean, Andy, you know me. I'm full on board.
Yeah,
I love Jeff Johns. Some Black and I love myself some Green Lantern.
Yeah.
I think Jeff Johns is an amazing writer. And I think just the way he reboots characters to make it gives them like a fresh start, and it makes you want to care about them, kind of like how he did with Aquaman.
Yes.
More recently.
The Aquaman's great.
The Aquaman comic is amazing.
We read that on here.
It is so good.
It's everything. For years, I was saying Aquaman is awesome and nobody fucking realizes it. And people would laugh at me. And I love Jeff Johns' Aquaman because he writes it the way I always saw Aquaman as being.
Exactly. And speaking of that, I still think you should pitch your Aquaman arc to DC.
I should.
Which I do remember you telling me about.
Yeah, I should write that and throw it at them.
You should. I'm sure they would do it.
Anyway, that's for something else.
But
he does, and he reboots characters and gives them a great new life. One of my other big problems with the comic is what he does with the old characters. The ones that came up in place of the characters that he grew up loving and brought back. Like Kyle. Anytime Jeff Johns writes Kyle, it's terrible. And Kyle is a douche and an idiot, and there's nothing good about Kyle. Nothing good about Kyle when Jeff Johns writes him. And I don't know how many times I said when we read Power of Ion, Kyle's my boy. So maybe there's something about this that I feel
that
personally slighted by Jeff Johns. That might be it, too.
That could be it.
I will say it was a really bad portrayal.
Right?
Like, when he turns into Kyle Lax, he just goes, cool. Like, no, that was the worst part of this comic.
And I don't understand, like, it's supposed to be the entity of fear. What is him going around saying, cool, bro? What fear does that put into anybody?
Well, see, Kyle Rayner is artsy, and his deepest fear is actually becoming a bro. No?
But
no, it was just really bad.
That would make Kyle fearful, but you've already got Kyle. You already broke Kyle, and you took him. You don't have to scare him anymore. You need to scare everybody else, and saying cool doesn't scare anybody.
The thing that actually kind of made me feel like his personality was off is when Parallax is talking to him about his deepest fears, and Parallax goes and says something about how he secretly wants to be special again, the way, like, Hal Jordan wanted something. And I just felt like that didn't connect in any way with what I knew of Kyle Rayner's character.
Because he was the last Lantern, and he was special.
Like, I could see Guy Gardner falling prey to that, or Hal Jordan, but I don't think that meshes with Kyle's personality at all, because, like, one of his main character traits is he's really, like, generous and giving, I think. And I don't know, it just didn't fit, and it made me feel like when I saw that, the whole interpretation of him as Parallax didn't work.
Yeah. And I think there's, like, I don't know what it is. There's, like, a fundamental misunderstanding or mishandling of Kyle's character in the Jeff Johns run. But you bring up Guy, and I really, there's a moment in here with Guy Gardner that I think nails his character when they all see visions of what scares them, right? And you follow, you get Hal's vision of his father and him being afraid of what his father said and afraid that his father died, feeling fear and all of that, right? You get that vision, and then you cut to the other lanterns and they start talking about what they saw, you know? And John, of course, immediately goes into, oh, I saw the decision I made. It was so terrible, he got burdened. And then you get Guy like, yeah, I saw like my girlfriend stabbing my sleep or something, whatever. I brushed it off and got the fuck up. Yeah, I don't remember. But he was basically like, get the fuck over it and fight, pansies. And I was like, that's exactly what makes Guy Gardner an amazing Green Lantern. Because all the rest of them, they even think about it for 2 seconds. They even think about it. They let the fear kind of get in there. Just a little, Guy, no. No.
Yeah, right?
Not even for a second. He's like, yeah, they showed me some shit. Whatever. Ain't real. Brush it off. Fight.
And then he has another great moment. I actually think Guy might be my favorite character in this book, because everyone's still pissed at Hal, you know, for murder. And they just got their asses handed to them. They got destroyed. And they're still like, don't talk to me, Hal. And Guy's just like, can we all just put our differences aside and realize what just happened to all of us?
Yeah.
Because Hal's kind of like, oh, don't worry about it. And Guy's like, no, you should worry about it. You should be mad at these people. But we need to forget that now. And we need to work together because we 59 lanterns have just been murdered.
Yeah, this we crap doesn't matter, guys.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think those scenes, I don't know, I should have paid more attention which ones of these were in the Green Lantern Corps run and which one were in Green Lantern. Because that's the other thing, is this book kind of meshes styles.
Yeah.
Because Green Lantern is the one that follows Hal, and Green Lantern Corps is the one that follows everyone else.
Right.
And Green Lantern Corps, I love. I love the art in it. I love Patrick Gleason. I love the writing in it. It's focused around Hal and Kyle and their bro dynamic, and it's fucking great.
Yes.
And that writer really gets Guy Gardner on like a fundamental level, and gets Kyle pretty good too. So I don't know where all the Kyle stuff comes from in here. Who are the other characters in this that you guys want to talk about? What about Sinestro?
Well, we can talk about Sinestro. I have another character that we should talk about after that. But let's talk about Sinestro first.
It opens up with him. I love the first like page with him.
With the scar of the Green Lantern symbol on his back.
That fucking Kyle fucking burned onto him.
Yeah. Jesus.
And he's just like, you can see he's just like sitting there. He's like almost meditating, focusing all of his fucking anger. His righteous, it's not anger though. It's like his self-righteous desire to control everything.
Yeah,
he's just like focusing it into that ring, and it's like, oh, he's fucking crazy. He's fucking insane.
Yes, he's an insane person.
His interactions with Natu,
the best.
Yeah, God, he's just. What I found interesting, too, is he was totally fine with her taking over the planet.
Well, because it got her out of the
picture. Yeah, and he'd come back later and get it anyway.
Yeah.
But it was just, like, it shows how conniving he is, because I think a lot of the time you get villains who would just try to kill her or something, and then, you know, do that and say, I'll be back for you later, planet. But he had this whole sense of, like, I'm going to play you, so you're stuck in this shitty situation that you fear, and walk away, and then come back and reap the rewards later. And I just really liked how that little bit showed that about him.
Yeah.
Because I think Sinestro can sometimes he just comes off as too angry, depending on the writer.
Hmm.
You know, like, he's just kind of like a raging lunatic, and he's actually really smart, if a lot, you know, of a tyrant, but I was gonna say if a bit of a tyrant, but it's not a bit. But yeah, it's I really enjoy seeing his, I guess, evil supervillain plotting side. Because I don't feel like we get the conniving side. Yes.
And you know, conniving. I really like that scene too, because it shows you maybe where his Achilles heel is. Because he does that to fuck with her and all of that. But I think he genuinely wants to protect his home planet.
Yeah.
Like, he is from Kurogar, and it was his prized jewel. When he was a Lantern, that planet was his prize. Like, he controlled it completely, and he says more than once in here that there was no crime, there was no any of that. It was all crushed under my heel. I mean, he doesn't phrase it that way, but, like, complete, perfect order he had, like, cultivated on that planet. And he doesn't want it to become, like, friendly fire or even just collateral damage for this war he's about to start. So he doesn't want her to leave. Because if she leaves and there's nobody protecting his planet and something happens, his prize jewel gets scratched.
Yeah.
So he wants her to stay and take on that position that she doesn't want to take. And then when he gets back, everything will be fine. He'll kill her and he'll just slide into her place. And they're all ready and set up for a ruler.
It's like, they really want to be ruled.
Yeah, but it's like all she has to do is leave. All she has to do is leave. And that will not only break her fear of the situation, but it might break Sinestro a little bit too. If Sinestro's out there fighting and sees her out there, I think he drops stuff and flies back to Kurogar.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point.
So there's that.
There is that.
Indeed. So, John, you said you had another character you wanted to discuss?
Yes. Mr. Hank Henshaw. The cyborg Superman. The man/machine that cannot die. The most emo character in all of the land.
I really loved his single tear.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
And he's important as well because he knows the secret of the 52. He knows the secret of the multiverse, which is also another seed that is planted for later on. So it's just... And I love that he's only in it to die. That's the only reason he's helping Sinestro and he's helping the Anti-Monitor. And he's helping all those, you know, the Sinestro Corp. That's why he's in it, because they can kill him and all he wants to do is die.
And he's gone to the one person or the one entity he believes can actually do it. And of course, it's the fucking Anti-Monitor who eats multiverses.
Yes.
I mean, if anybody can kill Hank Henshaw, it's probably the Anti-Monitor.
it probably is. And I also like that he has the Manhunters with him that work as some sort of battery.
Yeah, they're like walking batteries for the Sinestro Corps.
Which is awesome. And I just think, I don't know, man. Sinestro puts together a nice little crew. He's got Superboy Prime. That crazy, crazy MF-er.
It's punching the universe.
My favorite part is when Guy makes that little, well, not little, it's gigantic, the gigantic Supergirl.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And taunts him with it, and he just goes, heh.
Yeah. That's his thing. He does that later, too. Like,
Stupid Earth or something like that.
Yeah, that's what it was. Stupid Earth.
Stupid Earth. And he's just sitting there looking at it. These people are insane.
Yeah.
And the best part of them being insane is the Guardians know they're insane. And they're just like, I have writer's block. We should probably just start over. We should probably just burn this book.
Yeah.
While everyone that's defending the universe is dying because we won't let them kill anyone.
Well, like, they're doing this great debate over the Blackest Night thing, and it's like...
The Forbidden Chapter.
You either should have done that a while ago, or you need to not do that right now. because there are a lot of lanterns out there dying, and you should have done this whole, like, 10 new things where you let them have lethal force a long time ago.
Yeah, they should have. And the Guardians. I feel like we're going to talk about the Guardians a lot. Because okay. They haven't learned anything. Apparently, that when they were raised, they didn't listen. Because it's just repeating itself again.
Well, I mean, they got a little bit more militant, right? Like, they built a thing of armor around Oa. And they built these sector houses everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So that you didn't have to go all the way back to Oa for support or shelter. Even though it turns out they really didn't do anything, because we see the one sector house and it's just like fucking decimated. It's
destroyed. Hey, things are coming out of it. Oh, we're dead now.
Oh, it's dead bodies and yellow lanterns. Great. Okay, yeah, we're dead. So, I mean, that's all they learned, though, is to be more militant and to be more, like, to show more force.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't work. Because Sinestro's right. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter how much force you show. It matters how much force you use.
Yes.
And they don't use
enough. They use none force.
Yeah.
So here's a question. The Book of Oa is, well, obviously a book of prophecy. If they rewrite it, does that actually change the course of events? Do they just control the universe with this book, or are they just, like, hoping?
No, so...
That's a great question. Andy, go ahead.
The original Book of Oa, the Guardians wrote before they built anything. They built the Book of Oa with all of their collective knowledge about the nature of existence, which includes everything they could possibly know. So not everything in existence is in that book, just everything the Guardians could possibly know is in that book. And back in the olden days, that was filled with a bunch of information, and any lantern could walk up to the Book of Oa and read what they needed to read. They could read about the fellow lantern that they were going to be working with. They could do research about a case they were working on. They could read up on a planet they were going to have to go visit. They could read all kinds of things in this Book of Oa. But since their rebirth, the Book of Oa was closed off to outsiders.
Hmm. Okay.
It didn't really get brought up that much at all during the Kyle Rayner run on Green Lantern, but since, like, the Geoff Johns takeover, the Book of Oa kind of, like, just got a lot quieter. You lock it in this room, and the Guardians get to read it, and that's it.
And you light it on fire when you don't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just seemed like the weird part. It's like, why are they burning this chapter?
So that's what it's the symbolic destruction of their own knowledge.
Okay.
It's like, because it encapsulates everything they could possibly know about existence, if they burn it, they're saying, I don't want to know this. I don't want to think about this. I am putting this out of my mind. I don't believe it's true. Even though the book fundamentally is their knowledge of existence. And they change an event that happened in their past to something that truly happened into something that they call, like, lies or the Yzmalt Empire, the Empire of Tears, like, trying to seed fear in them. So do you guys know what any of that stuff is? The Empire of Tears and the Yzmalt and...
I don't.
No, not really.
So Abin Sur's ring came to Hal Jordan, right?
Mm-hmm.
His ship crashed after visiting the planet Yzmalt. And it's actually a really, really, really good story written by Alan Moore way back in the day. In the old Green Lantern Corps that used to exist, that should exist again because it was awesome. And it's this planet full of demons that used to have an empire that spanned most of the galaxy until the Guardians themselves put them in their place. And so Yzmalt is considered a forbidden planet. You're not supposed to go there. But Abin Sur started hearing voices of doubt in his mind. And one of those voices told him to go to Yzmalt. And you kind of get the sense that that makes sense. Because Abin Sur dies when his ship crashes.
Hmm.
His ship. Why the hell would a Green Lantern ever use a ship? So they started to have him doubt his power and his ring and doubt his ability, and they started to make him fearful. And so like, that original Empire, I don't remember how it's all retconned, but it has something to do with the Parallax entity and the original, like, the, all of this stuff is prophesied in that story. Like, as that story ends, the people of Yzmald are telling Abinsur all these terrible things about how there's going to be a war of light and how all these things will happen until the core is almost dead, and then this man named Sodom Yat will try and save you all.
Okay.
Sodom Yat!
And then, like, Abinsur just goes, wigs out, gets in his ship, and flies off, except it's damaged, and then he crashes on Earth.
I see.
That's my recollection of it. That's probably not 100%. That's my recollection. It's like a really short story. It'd be really quick and easy to read. I can loan it to either one of you.
Cool. I'll check it out.
But yeah, Sodom Yat. There's a reason that they want Aresia.
Yeah.
They want Aresia, one of their top lanterns from back in the old day, to look after Sodom Yat to make sure he doesn't die on the battlefield, because they know he's important. So they're not, like, that's the thing, is they're not, like, throwing that knowledge away.
Yes, see, they like to pick and choose.
Exactly, which is what's wrong with them.
Yes. Like the Forbidden Chapter, just because you don't like the chapter doesn't mean you should burn it.
Yeah.
Because it might be important later. Spoiler alert.
When you wrote it, you knew it could you knew it was in the realm of existence of possibility. You knew it was when you wrote it.
And don't they even write off Hank Henshaw, because they're one of them says, like, or they quote the chapter where it's like a half human, half cyborg will know the secret of the 52 or something.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you're quoting the Forbidden Chapter. Never mind.
Yeah, they're just like, shut up.
They're just shut it up. And then also in that scene, I believe the seeds for hope and love are planted.
Yes.
Which, oh man, I loved rereading this because there was so much.
Because when you know what comes later, you can see all the little seeds.
Yes, and it's fantastic.
And you know, if you're reading this and you go like, okay, well, there's a color for willpower and there's a color for fear, there's a lot of other emotions. Shouldn't they have colors too? Like it immediately opens you up to the thought that it's possible.
I also love, like, they're like, you need to take emotion out of it. And I want to be like, I feel like I just read a story where all the little guardians were happy and laughing and showing emotion. It just kind of seems a little weird that they don't like that anymore.
Yeah.
Damn, guardians.
They were happy little baby guardians, and then they grew up.
Yeah, they were showing,
they
didn't
idiots.
Just come out. Yeah, they just didn't come out of the battery like all pan face and just like, whatever.
That would have been hilarious. It would have been so fucking creepy.
That actually would have been so much funnier.
Little baby guardians in diapers. This is...
They're just floating and they're just God. Hey, we're back.
Fucking terrifying.
Kyle's like, I've made a huge mistake.
And immediately kill them all again.
The vicious cycle.
Oh, if only. I would love to see the Kyle cover with him looking crazy and all the rings on his fingers. So then, okay, who else do we get in this? We get a lot of Hal in this.
We do get a lot of Hal. I did love the scene with the flashback scene with Hal and his father, and then you realize he's been transferred to the antimatter universe. I thought that was
cool.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool.
I did like that. I did like that trick quite a bit. Like, get him all in his own head, and then when he's not even noticing, pull him the fuck over.
Yeah, right.
Nice little trick.
It's great because Hal's still relatively new to being back in the fold. So
yeah.
Everyone is still doesn't like him.
Yeah, he's only been alive again for a little over a year.
And Ganthet comes to him and is like, dude, you gotta lead. You have to lead. He's like, I don't want to lead. And they're like, no, you do. You just, you know, they're
you just
all
gotta get over this.
You don't want
to
deal
thing.
With it. Yeah, you just gotta get over it, dude. Which, so he's got that whole thing.
Yeah.
Where he doesn't know if he wants to lead or. But come on, he's gonna eventually do it. Come on.
Does he? I don't remember if he ever does.
I feel like they're setting it up really heavily for him to do so.
Well, yeah, because, like I said earlier, Jeff Johns loves him, some Hal Jordan. And everybody else
also, this is how comics work.
Yeah.
They're like, you gotta lead, and he goes, no, and then he's gonna.
It's how most of the entertainment industry works.
That would be great, Gantz. It's like, no, you gonna.
You gonna. It snaps his
and
fingers.
And then they just disappear. You gonna lead. By the way, everyone you're looking for is underground. Bye.
Bye.
Yes, that was the best part. So I
guys,
actually,
Mogo.
Of course, Mogo. I like how they dropped the Mogo lore in this.
I love Mogo.
I did not know all that about Mogo, so this was like, I don't know, Mogo informational issue.
Yeah, he's basically like, he's the Green Lantern's therapist, and he figures out who is deserving of getting a ring.
So what happens if he dies? Like,
if he dies, they're like, no, they won't recruit any more lanterns. It's done.
So his ring is not going to go and find like another sentient planet.
No.
That is so sad.
So the rings can be given to other people, but there will be no mechanism to control who gets them.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. So he's like, he's their background check.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can tell, like, from this, you can tell, we were thinking about this before. He obviously has some kind of mind-reading power.
Right.
And maybe because he's a planet, maybe it's something like, because he's a planet, he's connected with the universe in a different way, because he experiences existence in a completely different manner.
Yeah.
It might be something like that, you know? And so that's how he can, like, fucking thousand sectors away, know who the right fit in that sector is out of all existence in that sector. Like, you know, it's probably something like that. But it is really cool to get that sense of him.
Yeah. Doesn't the comic also say that he's, like, the second biggest power source after Oa itself?
Yeah, he's the second biggest reserve of power, I think they say.
Yeah, which, I mean, makes sense. Because he's gigantic. Yeah, and he's
that's
mobile.
Pretty cool.
And he's probably, I think he's one of the oldest lanterns, too.
Yeah.
So, like, and, you know, like, they do the constant, like, ring power check kind of thing. And it's, like, for many of them, it, like, drains as they fly around and fight. But, like, what does Mogo do all day?
Yeah, he just chills.
Yeah, so if he does a power check, it's going to be, like, 15,000%.
Yeah. He's
like, damn. It's cool, bro. You're fine. You haven't moved at all. In a long time.
Although apparently he can bombard himself with meteors. Like,
yeah.
That was actually pretty cool. I didn't realize.
He can that move. Wasn't he in, did we read the part where they catch, Superboy Prime and kill, the old Superman?
No.
No.
No, not in this. I mean, like, as part of the show. As part of the show. Have we ever read Crisis on Infinite Earths?
No,
not
have
that
not.
One. It's Infinite Crisis. We haven't?
Yeah,
wait.
Infinite Crisis.
Hold on.
Yeah.
What's the one where Batman's, like, just stuck flying through time and then there's a cave guy, Anthro
Man,
or something?
That's Final Crisis.
Okay, that's the one we read.
That would have been a lot better with Mogo in it.
Yes.
Hey, so isn't that that's when the Return of Bruce Wayne series, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. All right, okay.
We have to read Infinite Crisis, because it's fucking ridiculous. We have to read it. We need to read Crisis on Infinite Earths and Infinite Crisis.
You know, speaking of Batman, we didn't even talk about how he's like, yeah, this ring, like, came to me. It was yellow. That was weird, right?
Oh, yeah.
Hal's like, I gotta go. This ain't good.
Yeah. I forgot that happened so early in this story.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, I love Reverse Flash's word bubbles.
Oh, yeah.
How they're all blurry, kind of. Oh, that was great. It's
really well done.
Zolomon.
Oh, man. Where's the...
I gotta tell you, Reverse Flash is probably, like, my favorite villain in the entire DCU. What would make you a better hero if I killed your friends? That's so fucked.
He's ridiculous.
He should have been the first one. He should have got 20 rings.
I know. Right, like, what the fuck ring is he going to get? It should be. It really should be the fear one. It really should. Because he's nuts.
Oh, goodness. I'm actually flipping back through that first issue. And I think it has, like, the worst panel of all of them. And it's where it's Wonder Woman's, like, only shot where she's just like, let me play bad cop.
Yes.
So bad. That's just, like, that's corn on the cob corny right there.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh. Cannot. Oh, I actually got a new, like, favorite rando character reading this, and it's Lantern 2828 and his cyborg, or his android buddy.
Oh, Green Man and Stell.
Green Man, yeah.
Oh, they're fucking great. You, Jen, you really need to read the Green Lantern Corps run. I'm going to give you a bunch
I do.
Of it.
It's,
you would love it.
Well, you know how much I love bromance. It seems like it's just like all the bromance.
Yeah, because every set of partners is their its own bromance.
These guys are so great.
Where's my note? I wrote a note here. Here it is. I would read a 6-issue arc of just Kilowog and Thos.
Right? That's great. When they're like in the middle of the fight and Kilowog's like, so tell me about ranks again. And Thos is like, okay, let me start from the beginning. I called Guy Gardner over because this thing kind of floated into my sector and I just really wanted to... It's like this
I feel
just
like
long meandering paragraph and Kilowog's like, get to the fucking point.
If Thos was to be voiced by someone, it would be Patton Oswalt. Hands down.
Yes. I can see that.
And we didn't even talk about how those characters that we were introduced to in the last one where we were like, eh, whatever. Like they come back.
They make their first reappearances, and by this point, they've sorted out their differences quite a bit.
Yes, it seems like they have, and they're both still alive, which is...
But you know, it's so funny, you're right, like, in the first trade, they're like, get so much screen time, and then by the time you get here, it's like, eh, whatevs.
Yeah, they're there, but it's also like, I know those people!
Yeah.
They don't get any more screen time than Sodom Yat or Arisia or any of the other lanterns that are just kind of hanging around. Come to think of it, that might be another part of my problem with this. As we're talking, I'm starting to realize why I'm uneasy about saying that I like this comic. Because one of the things I really like about Green Lantern Corps and Green Lanterns is how diverse the Corps is. And how you get to see so many different characters. And in this, you get to, you know, see them technically. But you get no experience to them as people. It's this story is all plot and spectacle and like zero character. Unless your name is Hal Jordan. This is pretty much zero character. Hal Jordan or Ganthet. You get Ganthet character as well. Okay,
I feel
sorry.
Like you get some Natu as well.
Yeah.
I mean, let's see a bit about her.
Natu and Sinestro.
Guy.
I think the Guardians are the ones that you get the most, like, man, these guys suck. Except for those two. They seem pretty cool.
They seem to be the only ones undergoing development because they're actually, like, changing due to their struggle.
Yeah, they took names.
And, I mean, we view the Guardians as kind of a singular body, so when they start kicking out their members, that's a really big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, they act as a singular body. I think they call themselves, like, a singular council, or they almost refer to themselves as a singular entity.
So I had a question about another lantern that I spotted. So. And it's, which issue is this? It's chapter 4, where they're fighting, like, all the yellow lanterns.
Oh, I hope it's the person I think it is. Go ahead.
Like, over Mogu. And there's just this fucking box.
Yes.
Who is this box? Tell
I don't know.
What is happening?
I don't know, but I noticed it too, and I really want an issue about the box.
Exactly. I want, like, full backstory. I want, you know, like, the origin story for this box. Who is it?
Where is this again?
So this is
it's
in
the big,
chapter
it's the big
4.
Fight over Mogo.
It's the, like, 2-page spread where the panels start going, like, all sideways and weird.
Where's the box? I'm probably going to laugh really hard
it's
when
like
I see the box.
Upper right hand corner.
And it looks like a gift box that was wrapped up too.
Yeah, it just has like a stripe.
Yeah, like all you really need to do is put a bow
on it. It's in the 2-page spread.
So the top corner is Kilowog saying for Oa. And
oh,
then there's
I'm on the wrong
okay.
one.
Then the panels kind of disintegrate and format wrap around, and there's like a quasi 2-page spread.
Yeah, the top left corner has Kilowog.
Yeah, what is that?
It's just a box.
That's awesome.
What's in the box?
It's just an ancient box.
What is in the box? That is ridiculous. Oh, can we also talk about Blue Vampirella?
Sure.
Yeah, listen.
How
Frank.
Funny is that? I saw her and I was like, "What is Vampirella doing in this right now?" Like, and she's blue, and she. I mean, I just wanted to make a comment about that. I could really give a fuck less about her. She didn't really bring anything to the.
I think the other thing that kind of gets me, not about the comic, but it's like when you read about the Sinestro Corps members, they just seem like a whole lot of like they're straight analogs of the Green Lantern Corps, but just one-upped a little bit, right? Like the Green Lantern Corps has their smallest member, which is Buzzed, except the Sinestro Corps has a smaller one and its virus is even smaller. It's like, oh, we have a little guy too, and he's even smaller. It's like the Sinestro's like the guy in the party who just wants to one-up everybody.
He's a one-upper.
It's like, oh, you've got guardians? Oh, yeah? We got a guardian with tits.
Oh, your ring can hurt people? That's cool. My ring can murder people.
Exactly. Like, oh, your drill sergeant has, like, big teeth and these, like, weird gummy jowl things sticking up? Yeah, mine has fucking saber-tooth teeth. Suck on that. Because they're, like, the same build and everything. And then when they fight each other, it's just put right in front of you that they're just, like, analogs of each other. But it's just one-upped because it's Sinestro Corps.
Oh, Sinestro Corps. I'm trying to think of what else we might have not gone. Go ahead, sorry.
I complain about all this stuff, but it really is still a really fun read. Like, if it is all plot and spectacle, it's good plot and spectacle.
And it's a great cut for part two, because it's like, uh-oh. They're going to try and destroy Earth now. Hank Henshaw's like, yes, my death is so near. He's just crying. I just want every time you see him, just him be crying.
That single tear.
He's just so happy that he's near death.
But it's still, that last page, the art is great because you get that sense of, like, looming doom with, like, the thing in the sky. But then you get stupid Kylax.
Yes! Yes!
It's like such a corny
make
thing.
Make a wish.
Like, can I make a wish? It's so corny and stupid.
Terrible.
I thought the art all around was really good. That's all I have to say about the art.
I liked it. Kyle has too many teeth.
Yes, but I mean,
that's the thing.
Like, even when he's not, like, a gaping maw of parallax, he has too many fucking teeth.
Yeah.
And I guess that makes him look more evil, but no. Otherwise, I really did like the art. The teeth just, like, really bothered me for some reason.
That's just the way they draw parallax nowadays. It's just tons of teeth.
Yeah.
Man. I really, really love the cover for issue 23 for Green Lantern, where it has Hal Jordan with all of the yellow rings.
Yes.
Like, it's that same parallel, like, right after he stole all the Green Lantern rings. It just, that look on his face is so fucked up.
Yeah, I thought all the cover art was really good. I think 22 was my favorite cover.
Or, I think, yeah. Or no, 22? I think you said 21 before. Anyway.
I just love all the covers. They're all great.
Oh,
just the art all around is great.
This is the other thing I wanted to ask. What did you guys think of the scene where Guy Gardner's neck almost got snapped?
Yeah, okay.
Because he goes, snap!
Yeah, so what happens there? Did he half snap his neck? Or
I don't know. Did he just, like, pop his neck?
Well, see, here's the thing that... He's like, there, you're adjusted. Come back in 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I almost... Yeah, it makes no sense because I want to say it's like, oh, maybe that's the beginning of Ion breaking out and Boudica, or as I like to call her, Boudica, because she was like the worst character. Hal saves her life and she's like, don't touch me. I'm like, okay.
She's from like an honor warrior based society. So in her mind, there's nothing worse you could have possibly done than what Hal Jordan did.
Well, she still sucks.
Yeah, she does.
But yeah, he like, it's the beginning of the snap, but then he's like totally cool. Like a panel two later.
I think if you don't like try to break someone's neck quickly, it probably snaps multiple times. Because, I mean, have you ever just like turned your head really far and cracked your neck and it starts cracking a lot?
Yeah.
That happens to me. Like, maybe it's that. Maybe he's just, like, slowly trying to rip his head off and only gets started.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just so weird. Because when I was looking through it before we were talking, I'm like, wait a minute, did he die? I don't remember that. And then I, like, 2 pages later, he's just like, oh, we're on Earth, I guess.
Yeah, and I really do think it's just, like, I don't know, it's like a tease for the reader, or like a gotcha kind of... It's weird, because why would you start to make the noise on the page if you weren't going to, like... I don't know.
Maybe it's because that's how close to death he was.
But, like, you could do that just with having, like, your hands around his head and his neck twisted. Like, just by looking at the art, don't worry, I got it. The only reason you write snap is to tell somebody that the snapping noise happens and their bones have cracked. That's like the only reason that, because it's not like you're snapping his neck. Like, when you, like, no, it's not like you're popping his neck. Because when you pop your neck, you're doing it at a joint.
Yeah.
And you don't break somebody's neck at the joint.
Yeah, that.
It was just really weird. Anyway, do you guys have, like, a favorite scene that stuck out to you? Because if this, like, as I'm complaining, that this is all just plot and spectacle, like, where's that good plot and spectacle?
I had two that I really loved. And one was Hal Jordan's flashback to when his dad died, and he's, like, trying to hold his father. I thought that the art depicted that so well. Like, it was just the saddest thing. And then the other one was where Green Man, you know, tells his ring that he doesn't want to stop looking for his partner. And he just kind of, like, kneels in space and looks really sad. And it just broke my heart to see that. Like, I love that so much. Just because I think both of those things, even though there's all this shit going on and there's so many characters, it really serves to make a connection to who these people are and, like, make them really likable. Because I think it's easy for emotions that aren't like fear or willpower to get lost in all of this big plot movement. So when you get like little things like being worried about what your father was thinking when he died, or, you know, wanting to find your buddy, I think it's really important characterization, and it just made everyone that much more likable.
And it's important for the story too, because those moments are showing you what's different between the Green Lantern Corps and the Sinestro Corps. And you have to believe that those moments are going to be the moments that help them win.
Yeah.
Shows you why they're the good guys.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The flashback scene, yeah, fantastic. Guy telling everybody to stop messing around.
Off.
Yeah, we got some major shit to take care of. There are a couple of art panels, just from a, like an art standpoint. I really like when Sinestro was holding the ripped up Green Lantern flag, and he was all,
he's like coming down onto Corridor.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That one's fucking great.
There,
there is a lot of good art, and as I said in the last episode, I think Natu is once again drawn very well. I don't know whoever is drawing her must really, really like drawing her and all of her scenes. Yeah, just he must really, really like her. There was another one where it was just an outline of Sinestro with like yellow eyes. But that's when he's telling her, like, oh, yeah, you're going to stay here and lead, and I'm going to make it look like we had a battle, but I really just destroyed you. I'm going to leave now.
It's okay, and my favorite isn't, there's a scene where, a panel where it happens at the end of the episode, but there's another one where it's, like, kind of in the corner, and the Lost Lanterns are retelling what happened to them underground. And it's that scene where they like turn a corner and then there's the anti-monitor and they go, oh fuck, and turn around and run away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Proper reaction right there. Proper reaction. Yeah, right. Say, oh fuck, and GTFO.
And I love when they're like flying away on Ion, like, they're like, wait a minute, anti-monitor is their guardian? Wait, what's happening right now? They're like, no time. We got to get the fuck out of here.
Yes. We can think about that.
I'm on the giant green whale.
Think about that later.
Yeah.
For now, just run. Just run.
Just live. Away.
That was great. Because that moment's just like, yeah, proper response right there. Proper response. All right. The only other thing I got to ask you guys about the art. We all agree it's great. What did you guys think about the quote-unquote full-page spreads where you have to turn the whole comic sideways?
That I did not like.
Yeah, not really a fan.
Do not like that.
I think that there are other creative ways to deal with making, like, a really big epic impact and still having, like, enough room for everything to flow. Hmm. And they actually did it, like, that page where the box lantern is. I thought that was well done.
Yeah.
You know, where they have, like, the disintegrating panels. But this was just... Is work. I'm too lazy for this.
Yeah, I don't want to turn things. Just show them to me, right? So, but I know that's sarcastic, but I totally agree. It's just
out of the experience, because it's like, this is a really engaging story, and then suddenly I read it, I turn the page, and then nothing makes sense because it's all sideways, and then I have to go, oh, I'm reading a book, and turn it, and it's just. It really yanks you out.
Yeah, takes you right out of it. Oh, and then that one with the four, it's
you have to read it both ways. So it's like you have to look at the picture one way.
Oh yeah, it like turns as you read it, right?
Yeah, and then you have like all the like the panels. Yeah, yeah, you have to turn as you read it. And I'm like, oh, that's too much work.
I mean, I appreciate them trying to do something different.
It reminded me a little of, like, J.H. Williams III, where he kind of does, like, all this funky panel stuff and doesn't stick to the norms. But I don't think it was as elegant.
That's done well.
Yeah, basically.
And I mean, like, and it's not just that it's done well. Like, it's done... J.H. Williams III is, like, the master of how to incorporate paneling into your art style. Because not only does he do it in funky ways that are different and neat, he does it in funky ways that are different and neat and enhance the storytelling of the art. And, like, that's the pinnacle. Not only do you fuck with things, but you fuck with them in the way that makes the way the art tells the story more efficient. That's, like, that's the ultimate goal, and he is fucking spot on with it. So I appreciate DC editorial telling these guys, try this new thing, we think it might work, give it a shot, draw some vertical splash pages. And you know, like, this is right around the period, I think, when, like, reading on tablets was it was just getting new. And so maybe there were people, like, experimenting with drawing in a vertical frame, maybe for a tablet. Maybe kind of that thing.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. That seems a bit of a stretch, though.
J.H. Williams III, does he do Batwoman?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, oh my god.
Yeah, that shit's awesome, right?
He's an amazing artist.
Yeah.
I bought a single issue of Batwoman just because of the cover art alone. Yeah. He is goddamn brilliant.
Yeah, the cover art. Yeah, his cover arts are fucking amazing.
Everything he does is great.
Well, yeah.
From what I've seen.
Read, was it Promethea?
Promethea, yes.
Yeah. It's one of his earlier things where he's just starting to experiment with, like, doing weird things to paneling. And you can see how he's getting there, and you can see how he's trying things and realizing they don't work. But it's cool to see the process grow into what it is today, and today it's fucking great. Well, I don't have anything else to say about this one.
Can't wait to until next week
to read volume 2. Yeah.
Volume 2.
See how the whole story of the War of Light ends next week.
No.
Not even close. You got to buy like 20 more trades for that.
Yay, 20 trades.
So, who wants to rate it first? John.
I'll go.
Jen. No, Jen goes first.
Okay. So, I'm going to give this 4.5. I actually really like this. And, I mean, I like Green Lantern, and I feel like I have not read a good space epic in a while. So, that's actually what I was in the mood for. And it worked really well. It played with an ensemble cast in a strong way. Like, yeah, maybe we didn't get all the characterization we could have, but there's a lot of people, and at least we got a sense of, like, individuality among them. The art was gorgeous. This comic pulled off Busy way better than the other two we read. Like, you understood what was happening in every page, and it wasn't in any way confusing, but it was still really just rich. And yeah, I think that's a word that kind of characterizes this trait. Like, the story is rich. There's a lot of stuff going on. The art is rich. But it comes together and leaves you with, like, a respectable cliffhanger where I really just want to go on and see what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not, like, mad that... I don't feel like I've been duped into reading a serial comic. So, yeah, I really like this. 4.5.
All right. John.
Who... Is it a perfect 5?
I don't know. It's close, though. I mean, just... I know it's a setup comic for the most part, but it's just so good. I'm going to go with 4.5. Possibly, if you paid me off, I could say it was a 5. But 4.5 for sure. Just because... Yeah, I love Geoff Johns. I love the writing. Everything was great. It was a delight. And it gets even more delightful. 4.5.
Okay.
Cool.
I guess I'm going to rain on this parade.
You're allowed to.
Don't you say maybe... one, Andy. Don't you dare
no,
say
God,
one.
No. As much as I feel like so much of Geoff Johns and his hand in this is like, look at how big of a fight we can have. Anti-monitor. Let's bring an anti-monitor. Like, there's a whole lot of just, like, I don't know. Just, like, that one-upmanship extreme. The dire grittiness that doesn't really need to exist. But kill order anyway for the Sinestro Corps. Let's let them kill each other. I don't know. There's just a whole lot of that. And I don't know. Maybe I just feel personally hurt by Geoff Johns.
you must.
I don't know. I can't put my finger on what I don't like. And the more I think about the rest of the War of Light, I kind of even get less excited. I really like the idea behind it. There's so much, like, ripe storytelling that happens there. But so much of what comes up when I think about it, in retrospect, feels meandering. And this is such a tight story by comparison. So I'm going to give this a solid 3.5. Because it's, as much as I have problems with it, I mean, it's a fast read and it's a fun read and the art is really good. And like you say, Jen, I just, even though I've read it before, I like watching to see where it goes, because there's this big sense of impending motion that nobody in this comic can stop. And it's not set in motion by anybody here. It's just kind of like the universe exists and it's going to roll this direction. And Sinestro didn't start it and the Guardians didn't start it, but none of them can stop it. The universe is going somewhere. And as much as the Guardians want to deny it and burn that part of their book, it's not going to stop anything. And as much as the Lanterns want to just get order back and be the only light in the universe again, it ain't going to happen. The universe is a-changing, things are going to happen, and nobody can stop it. And I really like that like tone and feel of this book. It's just like, it's coming. It's coming. Make a wish. The Make-A-Wish part is so stupid. Anyway,
Make-A-Wish.
Yeah, three and a half. And I'm really interested to see, because I've only read through the entire War of Light thing once. So I'm really interested to see what happens when I reread Volume 2 for next week. So yeah, next week, Volume 2, written, drawn by the same people, pretty much, collects Green Lantern number 24 and 25, and Green Lantern Corps 16 to 19, and also parts of Sinestro Corps Special. But really, if you have to read the singles, feel free, but I would pick up the trade because it's like collected in like a weird order. So go ahead and pick it up that way. Anyway, that's it for this week. If you want to know what we have coming up after all this Green Lantern stuff, go to our website, www.apsupercast.com. If you have a suggestion for what we should do after this, send us an email.
At atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
It's cool. I'll cut out the big blank space.
Okay.
You'll never get me to do it.
And there's all the social media stuff. Twitter.com/APSupercast, but Facebook.com/APSupercast and apsupercast.tumblr.com. That's the good one. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
John is just going to sit quietly.
Fuck this outro.
Your guys' logo is so purple.
Yeah, I know.
That's what's going through my head right now. As you guys do this, oh, so purple, and I'm just looking at it. That's what I'm doing.
You know why, John? Because it used to be green. It used to be green, and then I saw a sweater that looked like it had our logo on it. I was like, what the fuck is this? And they said, oh, it's a sweater from Big Bang Theory. So I had to go change it really quick.
We were like, fuck this.
I had to go change it really quick. Yeah. It was just the first thing I randomly clicked on in the color palette on Photoshop. Anyway, that's it for this week. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.